Some of us, there are just topics that are more challenging than others. And I told our team this morning, this week has been a little interesting to me because I was all ready to share about this topic in week five. We've been doing this series called When We Get There. And for those of you who are relatively new with us, we've actually only been in this building for 5 weeks. And so this is our fifth Sunday here. And we've been talking about the whole idea of the there's in our life, that when we recognize that there are certain kind of goals and aspirations and things like that. And then when we get there, we kind of celebrate that for a while, but then we have a tendency to want to move kind of on to the next there. What's the next thing? And so we've kind of cycled through a few different things. We talked about week one, we talked about I have a question and processing this next step language, which is something significant for us that we're all about, first steps and next steps in our journey with God and how we process and how we kind of unpack what next steps are. Week one, we talked about I have a question and how questions can be a catalyst for next steps. Week two, we talked about that a resource gap is what's holding us back from taking a huge next step in our relationship with God. Last week, we talked about this idea of needing relationships, but we framed it a little differently than just the standard, hey, you need to be in a group and things like that. And so, but all three of those things were things that are kind of easy to unpack. But they're all places where all of us could probably say, yeah, I need some of that, I need to figure that out, or there's something there for me. This week, we're talking about this idea of I need to be a contributor, I need to be an investor. And to be honest, it's a paradox for me because on the one hand, there's always roles that need to be filled, there's always a task that need to be done, there's always resources that need to be utilized, and could we use more volunteers? Yes, we could. And are we awash with cash and just, you know, able to do every ministry opportunity that we want to do? Not so much necessarily. So there's always opportunities to be a contributor, but there's a paradox for us. Because one of the core kind of cultures of Catalyst is we are a serving culture. We've always been a serving culture, and there's always been kind of a place for, hey, if there's a place that you want to step in and be involved in ministry and connection in that way, that there is a place for you here. And the on-ramp is very short. You know, we don't have a whole lot of like probationary period in a lot of those cases. I mean, obviously in certain areas more so than others. But we've tried to be a serving culture because we believe that the serving nature of Jesus is what compels his followers to serve in that way, and that is a part of it. And so because of that, what's been fascinating is we have a culture that's a little different than most churches in the sense that in a lot of churches, you kind of have what's called the 20-80 principle, where like 20% of the people are doing like 80% of the work. Well, Heather and I were having this conversation, and this is what screwed up the whole message. So if you want to blame somebody, you should blame Heather Webster. You can say that to heather@iamcatalyst.org, okay? So because she said, you know, hey, we're working through this volunteer thing, and she caused me to start looking at and kind of navigate, just like for instance, on a given month, if we were to kind of lay out all the volunteer roles here at Catalyst, it would take, there's 108 opportunities to engage in a ministry just on a weekend, and 108. And then I started looking at the list of people who are kind of our active, regular members. We don't have formal membership here, but just active as a part of the church. And I looked at that number, and I started looking through that list, and I thought, I can't really think of anybody who's a part of our church who's not on that list. And so now some of those are, you know, some of those are duplicates, and you know, you can do more than one thing in a weekend or whatever the case may be. So this paradox is, we have done exactly what we set out to be. We've set out to be this place where everybody has an opportunity, feels empowered and encouraged to serve, and yet there's still a gap. And so it's like, so what do we do with that? Do we make people feel guilty about that? Do we say, well, you're just not serving enough, or you know, we don't have enough contributors, we don't have enough investors, and at the same time recognizing that we have this need, there's still kind of a gap there. I mean, the guy who played the guitar this morning is terrible. And so just that in and of itself, I mean, you know, we need some spaces there. So I got to thinking, how do I frame this? So that it's life-giving and not guilt-inducing, but reality offering and helping us to understand. And then I started to think, maybe I should just tell this story. So I've been meaning to tell this story, and I've told it to a few of you. And I think it actually fits in the context of where we're going this morning, and then I'm gonna get to the message. So it fits. So we were actually, there's a person in our church, Ryan Ennis, who has this truck, a 1994 Ford F-150 pickup truck. And in the context of our move, it's been hugely helpful because I don't have a truck, but we've had, you know, we were portable, so we were moving trailers and stuff that we were kind of getting back and forth and just stuff that we were hauling to the dump and all these things. And so one of the responsibilities of that was, you know, I would just try to keep the truck semi-maintained. I've actually broken the door handle off. And so every single, you know, if you see somebody in town who looks really weird because they're always rolling the window down and having to reach out, that's me in a red F-150 truck. I have the handle I got to put back on. That's a whole nother story. So the other day, I recognized about 2 or 3 weeks ago that the fuel was getting about empty. We were about out of gas. But I was running behind, and so I just didn't have a whole lot of time. And so I did the one thing you're not supposed to do. I let it sit. I let it sit almost on empty for like a week. And then it got super cold. So I'm feeling go to pick the truck up, and I'm like, I got to go put some gas in this truck. And I go to put some gas in this truck. And when I do, I like put the gas nozzle into the thing, and I kind of start to put it in, and it like 25 cents goes in, and I'm like, oh, this is terrible. This is awful. The gas line is completely frozen up. What am I gonna do? So I go to AutoZone and I buy some heat, and you put some heat in there, and it's supposed to kind of get all the moisture out of the fuel line. So I go and I put that in there, and then I guess you're supposed to give it some time, so I gave it 15, 20 seconds at least. And then I tried to put some more gas in there, and lo and behold, like 12 cents goes in, and I'm like, this is terrible. So then I'm like, okay, well, maybe I just need to let it sit for a few days. So I go and let it sit for a few days, and I take it back, and I'm thinking, this has got to be okay, because if it's not okay, I got a real problem, because the tank was empty. I mean, there was nothing in the tank. The little E is just like pegged over. So I go back to Rickers, and I try to put some gas in it, and like, again, like 7 cents goes in. And I'm thinking, this is horrible. This is just an awful thing. I'm going to have to call Ryan and tell him I've totally screwed up his truck, and I don't know how to fix this. And about the time that I put the nozzle back in the tank, I realized something. See, I was kind of looking at the side panel of the truck, and I noticed that there was an open door where you can put gas in the gas nozzle. And then I looked back towards the back of the truck, and I realized, you know, there's a whole nother gas tank on the back of this truck. And that was the empty one. See, what had happened is over and over again, I was just trying to pump gas in. So I went to Nancy Morgan's house, and like gas is like billowing out of the full tank. Like there, like it was so full that there was like gas coming out, and it was just this thing. And so I'm like, what is the, first of all, I was incredibly embarrassed because I find myself to be a pretty smart guy in most contexts, but here I'm this idiot who keeps trying to pump gas into a full tank. Meanwhile, the empty tank is not receiving anything. And so here's my point. Here's the reason why that story is important, not just because it makes me look like the idiot that I tend to be when it relates to automobiles and things like that, but here's what I find, and I think it's a great parallel to maybe what we're feeling as a church. I think for some of us, we've been a part of this for a long time. And as we've been a part of this, there's this energy that we keep putting back into serving and serving and serving. And there's a feeling that it's like, man, you know what? My tank is empty. And I keep wanting, you know, for something to fill my tank, and it's not. But we're always talking about how, trying to put fuel into people's lives, you know, kind of fueling people in God's word. And so it's like others, so there's this perception that it's like everybody else in the house is sitting on F, but I'm sitting on E. Why am I feeling this way? And maybe for a lot of us, the truth is, if we were honest, we feel like we're on E, and other people may feel like we're on F. And there's this sense of how do I get my tank filled back, and yet constantly trying to cultivate this context where we're serving church. And it's, you know, there's always going to, we're probably in a lot of ways we're going to be a little closer to E than maybe we're comfortable with and things like that. And so for some of us, we feel like there's this overflow. And so I started to think about, okay, how do I frame this context, this conversation of I need to be a contributor with two groups of people? And maybe you're one of the groups of people who are like, you're new, you're relatively new, you're still kind of trying to figure out the on-ramp of how do I get involved here, or do I even want to get involved here? Is there a place for me here? Or maybe you're on the other side where you're sitting, you're the empty tank, and you're like, hey man, quit, you know, that's all well and good, but I need to find a way to fill my tank too. So how do I frame the investor context? Well, one of the things I started to think about, okay, Where are the contributor stories in the Bible? And obviously we see all kinds of those, but one of the most impactful stories for me in the New Testament, in the experience of Jesus, was an experience with a guy named Matthew. Matthew was actually, by trade, he was a tax collector. And so there was a moment, though, when Matthew's life changes altogether forever. And Matthew went probably from something that he never thought he would be or be about into what I would call a full investor really quickly. So here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to tell you a few perspectives from Matthew's story. And then I want to talk about what does it mean to be an investor here, wherever you are on kind of the investor scale. What does it mean to be a contributor at Catalyst? And then I think it's important for us to also answer one more question. What am I getting? What am I contributing to? What am I investing to? So if you have a Bible, I'd like for you to turn with me to Matthew chapter 9, and I want to read 5 verses. In this story, there's so much that can be unpacked from just these 5 verses. So in Matthew chapter 9, we're going to start in verse 9, and if you have a Bible or a smartphone app, I'd love for you to follow along with me with that. If not, the words will be up on the screen, but would love for you to track along with that. And there's a place to write notes in your weekly there if there's something that is resonating with you and something that you'd like to take with you in that way. So Matthew chapter 9, beginning in verse 9, it says this. Then Jesus, and again, my eyesight hasn't gotten better since last week, if you were with me last week. So as Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew. And Matthew was sitting at the tax collector's booth. And Jesus says, "Follow me." And Matthew got up and followed him. Now, let me pause first and say, I don't know if Matthew started out with what I would call this investor's mentality. It's actually likely not the case, because it wasn't typically the posture of a tax collector to be one who was perceived by most of society as a giver. Tax collectors by nature were presented and the stereotype was that they were takers, not givers. And so when he was stereotyped with this decidedly taker's mindset, whether or not it was his or not, as we're about to see, something transformational is about to start happening in Matthew, where Jesus comes along and says, "Hey, I want to do something in you. I want to do something with you, and I'm going to actually ask something of you too. But it's going to require a change of mindset, a change of heart. It's going to require something where you may have seen yourself as a taker from this point backwards, but from this point forward, I'm going to challenge you to be an investor." It's amazing how a transforming work of Jesus can change a non-believing heart into one that is a believing heart. And it's also amazing how a transforming work of Jesus can begin to change a non-investor's heart into a heart that is overflowing with generosity of time and talents and resources. It happens with Matthew, as we're going to see. It happens with a guy, a little man named Zacchaeus. You know, you may have heard his story before about how Zacchaeus goes from the ultimate taker's lifestyle to the lifestyle of a major investor in the kingdom of God. Because here's the thing, there is a difference between a contributor and an investor, and rarely do we all start with this investor's heart. Let's go on. In verse 9, it says that Matthew is invited to follow Jesus, so he leaves what he was doing, picks up his life, and goes to follow Jesus. There's a huge difference between a contributor and an investor. I don't know if you've ever thought about the difference in those two words, and maybe we kind of use them interchangeably, but a contributor by nature doesn't necessarily always invest a whole lot of energy in finding out what is at the core of what he's giving to. A contributor, you know, like for instance, let me give you an example. I am a contributor to the United States Treasury. I am not completely bought into the vision of the United States Treasury, but I am required, I guess, so maybe I'm not even a contributor, maybe I'm a forced contributor, but I am a contributor to that, because even though I'm not necessarily bought into the vision, the reality is it's just a requirement of the law. However, there are other things in my life that I am highly invested in. And this investor mindset comes out like this. See, a contributor may donate to a cause or project or a person, but an investor understands that there's an exploration component that actually multiplies the value of their gift. Here's what I mean. Investors typically don't just wake up one morning and say, "I'd like to put my money into that." Usually what they've done is they have processed, okay, if I invest in this, if I involve myself in this, how is that going to change my life? How is it going to change the circumstance of the people I'm invested in? And when an investor decides to give, and think about this in your own life, when you've decided to invest in something, you go in knowing that you're actually, personally, you're giving something away even as you're giving to something. You're giving something away, and maybe you're giving yourself away, a part of yourself away, even as you're giving something to a resource to someone else. See, Matthew was leaving a pretty lucrative job, to be honest, with financial stability, influence politically, and walking away from that meant that Matthew was not just giving himself to something. He likely was giving up something that was of real value to him. I mean, there was something that he was walking away from that was going to cost him a lot. That's the difference between a contribution and an investment. Now, my taxes probably still cost more than I want them to cost. But the reality is that as a contributor, I'm not thinking through that. But as an investor, I recognize there's a risk. Actually, if you've ever seen like these advertisements for stock traders, what you find out is they always say, you know, there is risk involved in participating in this kind of endeavor, this financial endeavor. It will cost you something, and it could cost you more than what you're really wanting to give up. One of the things I appreciate so much about our tribe here at Catalyst is not just that our level of generosity continues to grow, but I think what's grown with it over the past little bit is this understanding of investment, that it's not just that we're contributors, we're putting money in a box, or we're volunteering hours, or we're serving a weekend, or 2 weekends, or 3 weekends a month, or whatever the case may be, but we're recognizing that what we're doing is more than just a contribution, it's an investment in the lives of one another. It's an investment in the kingdom of God for eternal purposes. We're giving ourselves for the Lord and giving ourselves to each other, and that costs something, because the truth is, for all of us, we all have limited amounts of time, we all have limited amounts of resources, both financial and otherwise, and yet the contributions of those things haven't paused, despite the fact that we realize that those things are an investment. And I mean, in fact, they've actually gone up, I believe, as we realize that the value of those is in an investment mindset. And I want to talk about that, this heart of generosity. There's something there on that. I want to talk about that in a minute. Let's go on to verse 10, okay? So while Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, something happens. Okay, Matthew says, I'll follow. And then Matthew decides to schedule this party at his house. And while Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, we know it's a party because it wasn't just Jesus and the disciples. It says, many, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. See, Matthew immediately goes from a follower posture to an investor in the ministry of Jesus. Here's the reason why I would say that. There wasn't a timeline where Matthew had to kind of sit and learn and figure out, hey, how bought am I into this? Or, is this worth my time? Am I going to give my life to this? Immediately, he goes into this investor mindset because he throws this party. Now, here's where I would call this an investor mindset. When Matthew throws the party, Jesus isn't the only person in the room who's going to be asked certain questions. If Matthew invited all of his friends who lived the same kind of lucrative lifestyle that he did, and had the same influence politically that he did, his friends are going to say to him the same question that we get asked anytime we make a radical decision to kind of go in a new direction, and probably especially if we make a radical spiritual decision to go in a new direction with Christ. It's, why are you doing this? Do you realize what you're giving up here? Do you realize what this is going to cost you? Do you realize the relationships that you will not have? Do you realize the resources that you will not have access to? And so the reality is, don't miss that there is a financial investment here. Matthew throws this big party. I mean, big parties weren't cheap. They're not cheap now, and they're not cheap then. And I would tell you, if you throw a first-class party with high-class people, you can't throw a high-class party in a low-class way. And so Matthew is taking a significant financial hit, I believe, to invest in this party, this gathering of his friends. He throws this huge dinner party, and we're going to read later that Jesus was getting some important questions, but I think Matthew was getting some important questions too. See, investors will always face questions. And some of them are external, and some of them are internal. Investors will always have moments where they begin to question the why. Why am I doing this? Or others will question it. I wonder how many questions a day that Warren Buffett gets about the investment decisions that he makes. Now, probably now, not so much, because he's built up so much trust and so much credibility. I mean, the guy, everything basically he touches, it seems like, turns to gold. So now, there's a lot of people like, hey, whatever he says, I'll do. But there was a time in Warren Buffett's life when there were people who came around him and said, what are you thinking? Berkshire Hathaway wasn't always a multi-billion dollar company. At first, it was just an idea with a guy who had some confidence and had some goals. And a lot of questions were following that too. See, there will always be questions that investors face. Some of them are internal, some of them are external. Let's go on. Verse 11. We're gonna kind of pull this all together in just a second. When the Pharisees saw that Jesus was eating with the tax collectors and the sinners, and that Matthew had invited all these people in, the Pharisees saw this and they asked his disciples, why? And when they asked his disciples, see, Matthew would have been one of these guys. Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? See, Matthew's investment party wasn't just an announcement. It wasn't just a press conference. And this is the reason why this verse is so important. When the Pharisees said, why does your teacher do this? Matthew had this opportunity. All the disciples got this opportunity. And then Jesus is going to speak into it. But see, investment is always tied to vision. Remember how I talked about earlier that I'm a contributor to the tax, you know, rolls, but I'm not an investor in that? Because I'll be honest, Republican, Democrat, you can go both directions. I'm never really sure what the vision of what I'm contributing to is. There's always some level of unclarity there. But for me, anything I'm investing in, part of the reason I'm willing to invest in it is because I have honed down and tried to lock in and tried to figure out what is the vision of this and how does my investment play a role in that? See, the answer to why are you doing this, when Matthew's friends say, why are you leaving your life for this? When Jesus is asked, why are you eating with tax collectors and sinners? That's a vision question. Why are you doing this? And the answer to that is found in verse 12. On hearing this, Jesus says, it's not the healthy that need a doctor, guys. It's the sick. And then he says, go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. See, here's the vision. Matthew's investment, Matthew's going from a follower to an investor, wasn't just even about, hey, this looks like a good train to hook my car to. It wasn't just, hey, this seems like a fun thing. And actually, it wasn't even just, hey, I could really learn from this. My life could be better from this. Do you see what the vision was from moment one? That Jesus had kind of explained and Jesus had expressed, but also Matthew gets very quickly. It's this. See, the vision for Matthew was that his friends could experience the connection with Christ that had changed his own life beginning that day at the tax collector booth. So Matthew makes a strategic decision, and he makes a strategic decision to make a sizable personal investment to the vision in a no going back, this is how the new mission and trajectory of my life way is going to function. See, once Matthew goes to his friends and says, I'm all in with this, there's really no going back. And in an investor scenario, you think about most people who live like hedge fund managers, and let's all not feel sympathy for hedge fund managers, but let's think about it in this way. I mean, these guys are laying a lot on the line. When you're putting hundreds of millions of dollars into high-risk ventures, you better strongly believe in the vision of what you're doing. And for them, honestly, the vision is to make more money, so to get rich. But the reality is, for all of us, there has to be this sense of, I am so intrinsically tied to the vision, so committed to the mission that it is trying to be accomplished, that I don't mind putting some risk involved. I don't mind putting myself out there in a way that ordinarily others might say is a little crazy. See, Matthew knew that the vision wasn't just for him to be friends with Jesus. Did you get that? Matthew knew that the vision was not just for him to be friends with Jesus. And it wasn't even just for him to be discipled by Jesus. The vision was that others would have a life-transforming encounter with Jesus just like he had had. See, being an investor is a whole life posture. It's not compartmentalized. So Matthew put money, relationships, everything on the line, and unlike a lot of us who can kind of sometimes take the wait-and-see approach, he actually did it early rather than late. There was no long on-ramp for Matthew. It was like, hey, come follow me. And in the next section of the scripture, we don't know what the gap is between verse 9 and verse 10, but it's a short on-ramp before Matthew says, I don't want to just be a follower. I want to be all in on this. I want to be a contributor. I want to be an investor. Because the vision for others to experience what he's experienced with Jesus was so instantly compelling that he put a lot on the line very early in the game. See, urgency was not lost on Matthew, because here's what he realized. Here's what I think Matthew realized. This might be the last best opportunity to reach his close friends and colleagues, proximity-wise, distance-wise, whatever the case may be, while they were still part of his regular life. He knew that his life was about to change. He knew the trajectory. He knew the travel. He knew that, all of that was on the table. And because he'd invested himself in that, he knew he might have a strategically small window, that this was the only shot he had to reach some people who might never be reached otherwise. And so he didn't want to miss an opportunity. So he put himself on the line. He put himself out there early. He did not wait for a long, you know, ramp up. And he said, I'm all in with this, because the vision was so compelling. He struck while the iron was hot from an investment standpoint. See, the other thing is that being an investor requires getting past what I would say some burned bridges or being indecisive or missing the mark. Now, this is a little bit more inferred, but I think it's fair to say it might have been easy for Matthew to think, like pre-verse 9, to think, why would Jesus want me? Because, you know, I've been a tax collector and I've got a lot of influence, but I must have missed the mark at some point, because if I didn't miss the mark at some point, some other, you know, rabbi would have asked me to follow them, or, you know, he could have come up with 100 different reasons of some past spiritual failings or past bad decisions or maybe indecisions. Maybe this opportunity when Jesus comes by and says to Matthew, come follow me, maybe it wasn't the first interaction. Maybe it wasn't the first time they'd ever met each other. Maybe there'd been other opportunities where Matthew had been standing on the fringes, kind of listening to what Jesus said and the mission and the vision that Jesus was expressing and the life transformation that he was trying to offer. And maybe there was a time when Matthew said, you know what, someday I may want to get involved in that. I don't know. All I know is that in this moment, he decided, whatever was holding me back in the past, I'm not going to get hung up on that. I'm not, even if I've gotten burned or even if I've been indecisive in the past, I'm not going to get disqualified by that anymore. He got past it. See, investors are ready and willing to take the next risk without getting tripped up by risks or mistakes or indecision in the past. I truly believe that. You think about the people who live their life as investors. If they were paralyzed every single time they made a bad investment or a bad decision or an indecision, oh my gosh, they would never take the next risk. But there's something about an investor's posture, an investor's mentality that says, even if I've gotten burned in the past, even if I did something I wish I hadn't, or even if I didn't do something I wish I had, now is the opportunity. I'm going to lean in when the temptation might be to lean back. See, there's five postures of an investor. Investors leave the sidelines quickly, but they always count the cost. Number two, investors always have a giver's mindset, not a taker's mindset. Number three, investors jump in holistically, not compartmentalized, because investment is a lifestyle for them. Number four, investors know the end goal and they are fired up by the end goal. They are fired up by the vision. And number five, investors don't get scared or paralyzed by fear of past failures or a lack of investment history. Now, there's a lot there. And there's a lot there in just those four or five verses. And you may kind of be thinking, well, man, I didn't see all that there. But I would just say, go back and read that passage, Matthew 9:9-13, from the mindset of an investor. Now, let me throw a couple of other things out on the table here. One of the things that can tend to happen when churches start talking about this idea of I need to be a contributor, I need to be an investor, is we all have a tendency to start thinking about actions. And one of the actions we start to think about is the one that is connected directly to our time, talents, and our resources. But I would argue that one of the things that I would hope for us as a pastor, as a leader of this church, one of the things that I would hope for us, before we immediately default to that, let me just ask us to take one step back. And let me prompt a little challenge for us. Here's the vision. Here's the vision of what it means to be a contributor, what it means to be an investor at Catalyst. Not from an action standpoint, because I think we can manipulate actions. But here's the mindset. Here's the posture of the spirit, the posture of the heart, rather than a task list. So let me throw a few things out, because I do believe that really this investor ideology is not necessarily an action-based first. It's a mindset. It's a spirit first. And our actions can flow out of that. See, I believe that what we're trying to cultivate is a generosity mindset. And a generosity means mindset means a heart that's generous and will find ways to invest, because we want to be givers, not takers. We use that language all the time. We want to be a church that's about giving, not taking. I've been a part of churches. I've watched so many spiritual leaders who have postured churches from a, maybe pastored churches, but also postured churches, as a Freudian slip, but it fits there, from a context of being takers, not givers. And the community is like, man, you know what? They see through that so quickly. So we've tried very intentionally, always, to be a church with a generosity mindset, a givers, not takers heart. Because see, I believe a heart that's generous will almost always precede the resources to be generous. You got to write that down. A heart that's generous will almost always precede the resources to be generous. I meet so many people and they say, you know what, when God blesses me with this, then I'm going to do this. And I would argue that most, almost all the time, a generous heart precedes generous resources. Because there's this sense of, and Jesus talked about this a lot, that he is generous with little will be generous with much. And so I believe that this idea of, rather than waiting for the lottery to hit or the big cash fall to work, maybe what Jesus is prompting us is saying, hey, what if we changed our mindset first? What if we changed our heart first? Because then out of that, out of the generosity mindset, all kind of things can change. We want to cultivate a serving mentality. We want to cultivate what I would call a willingness to contribute to the conversation. One of the things that can tend to happen is people can kind of get this sense of that there are two or three people who kind of set the trajectory of the church, and then everybody else is just supposed to fund it and fuel it. But I believe one of the challenges over these next months and years for us is to broaden the conversation and to broaden who is contributing to the conversation. And so we want this to be a place where we're not just asking you to put something in the box and walk out, but we want everybody to be a part of raising the level of leadership, of spiritual leadership. There's no place in the Bible where it says this is the percentage of leaders you should have in the church. There's no place where there's a ratio or proportion where it says, if you have a church of 100, you need to have this many leaders. If you have a church of 200, you need to have this many leaders. The goal, actually, the interesting thing, leadership and discipleship are actually kind of synonymous in the scriptures. And so the idea is that there should never be a sense that it's like, well, everybody, you know, if this is us and then there's this and that. No. The goal should be that all of us should be contributing to the conversation, should be leading the trajectory of this tribe. I think one of the mindsets that we're trying to cultivate is a learner's posture, that we're always about being willing to take a next step to learn, to open ourselves in that way. And an other's first heart. Now, you might have thought we would say that what we're looking for as it relates to this investment posture is that we're looking for financial contributors, or we're looking for people to be on a serving team or two, or to lead something. And those are all good, but they really only work long term, and they really only help us take a next step with God if they flow out of the heart of an investor. Otherwise, they're just tasks that are performed out of duty or probably out of guilt. Now, do we need those things? Do we need financial contributors and being on a serving team? Yes, we do. But the next steps that we're asking God to prompt are not about doing them in spite of our heart, but as an outflow of our heart, an outflow of a mindset of a spiritual investor. And that was the posture that Matthew took on. All right, I got a couple more minutes here. Let me frame a couple things, because there are ways that we could say, how can I take a next step of contribution if I'm looking for a new on-ramp or what? I mean, financial partnership, one of the things that we talk about as it relates to the financial part of Catalyst Church is that we are always prompting next steps in our journey with God. And some of those are learning next steps, and some of those are questioning next steps, and some of those are contribution next steps. And so one of the ways that we frame this is to even just begin thinking about how you're connected and how we partner together, as John mentioned earlier, to bring about the kingdom of God's work through Catalyst Church. And so one of the trajectory that we talk about is the idea that if you're a non-giver, that we would like for you to consider becoming a giver. If you're a non-giver, and this is kind of if you're part of the tribe, if you're just kind of still exploring that, just bear with us a minute, but we do, you know, kind of want to help you understand what the next steps are, not because we're expecting something of you, but just this is how we kind of prompt each other as a tribe, that non-givers would become givers, and that givers, you know, if you're just kind of a random giver, and that's great, and we appreciate that, but that the notion would be maybe that you'd become a percentage giver, that it becomes a part of the regular budget of your life, that it's not an afterthought, but it's an intentional thought in that way. For some of us, the next step is that it has become a part of our regular life, but we need to take a step towards tithing. We believe that tithing is not just an Old Testament concept. We believe it's not just a New Testament concept. We believe it's a concept that God prompts in His people, asking them to entrust a tenth of their resources. And so we recognize that you may be in the non-giver posture, and we're not necessarily saying you got to make that jump all the way, but we believe that there is a next step process that God is prompting us in. For some of us who are tithers, the reality is that God may be prompting us in above and beyond investment. And if you look around this building, honestly, everything that happened in the transformation of this building was really above and beyond investment. And so it's something that we've practiced. And again, we're not all about just getting greater financial contributions, but we do recognize that where our treasures, there our heart will be. And our treasures are our time, our talents, and our resources, okay? And so that's one of the things that we want to prompt in. How can we take a next step of contribution? I would say discover your gifts. One of the things we started last fall was this Discover Your Gifts class, where really we find out, okay, I can serve out of my willingness, but is there a way that I can find out how I'm wired and how God may be prompting me to participate in His kingdom in ways that are wired, in ways that are life-giving? Not to say that there won't be roles that all of us have to perform in the nature of a servant, but how can I serve in a way that's life-giving to me and life-honoring to God and life-transforming for others? And so that's a way, maybe a way that would be helpful. This idea of contributing to the conversation, one of the things that we're going to lean into over the next little bit, we are so committed to this next step language, this next step questions of how do we help people grow? We're just, our elders, we're asking that question. How do we help you grow in ways that are life-giving and meaningful to you? One of the things that we're going to be leaning into over the next little bit is we're going to do an all-church survey. Completely anonymous, so you can kind of help us know where you are. But we're going to take those resources back, and it really is just asking that question. It'll take you 15 minutes, and we're just asking, what would help you grow? What as a church would help you grow? What as an individual would help you grow? We're going to take those that information that we find, and we're going to lock into figuring out whatever we can do to take those results and make them realities for our church, because we're so committed to not just talking about helping you take a next step in your relationship with God, but actually resourcing you in a way that would be helpful for that. And then the one of the other how can I take a next step is to leverage what you have to fulfill your part of the vision. That's the other's first heart. And for Matthew, what Matthew had was he had friends, he had a house, and he had this new connection with Jesus. He leveraged those three things through a party, and people's lives began to be transformed in that way. And the last thing I would just say is, for all of us, that there's the question that goes back to, well, an investor kind of digs into what they're investing in. A contributor may just kind of throw a gesture, but an investor wants to know what they're investing in. So let me talk to you just a moment about when we say, hey, be a contributor, be an investor here. Here's what you're investing in, okay? Now, over the next, some of this is seasonal, some of the next little bit of our ministry, but then at the end, I think it's going to extrapolate to our entire purpose, okay? So one of the things that we're investing in is we're investing in ongoing ministries. And so there's a deeper commitment to fuel what we're trying to accomplish, but one of the things that we're leaning into specifically as our elders, they said, we want to make sure that we tie everything we do back into a deeper connection with the Bible. So what you're investing in, when you invest time, talents, resources here, what you're investing in is a church that is ultra committed and going to be even more committed to tying everything we do back to living out the scriptural promptings of Jesus. That's what we're committed to. And so one of the things that we're going to do that I'm excited about in April, we're going to take the four Sundays in April and a fifth Sunday in May. We'll get you out before Mother's Day. But we have never done kind of like an all-church Bible study thing in the name of kind of connection groups. And so I am super excited because we're going to do that beginning kind of in a Sunday late afternoon, kind of a small group format, but it'll be multiple small group formats just to kind of lean into this Bible engagement where we kind of frame this idea that the Bible is not just a story that happened thousands of years ago, but the activity of what was going on in those stories was so transformational and is so transformational for us. And I'm just super excited about that. And I'll tell you more details about that in the weeks to come. But one of the things, so what are you investing in? You're investing in ongoing ministries. We're investing in partnerships. One of the things we talked about last year was this idea that we want to get our budget to a place where 10% of all of our resources are going completely into ministries outside of our church. We're at 8% and we're moving in that direction. So when you're a contributor, when you're an investor here, you're investing in things that are going on in this community, but also around the world. We're investing together in staffing support. We're actually, the process of that is that our elders are talking about, we're putting a job description together, we're working on looking for a youth pastor. We're working on it, we're not just talking about it, we're looking for that context. And the goal is that we'll have that in place by August. There may be other roles that are performed through staffing, but we're not just kind of talking about that anymore. We're working to make that happen in a real, because we recognize that there's a group of your sixth graders and your fifth graders who are kind of looking at, okay, what's the next step of ministry for me? And we want to be prepared for that. We want to make the facilities fully functional for our catalyst needs. But here's the bigger picture, and I'll end with this. What are you investing in? When we contribute, when we serve, when we give, when we show up here, what am I investing in? We're investing in a place for more Matthews. We're investing in a place for more Matthews. And we're trying to think through outside-the-box ministry ideas, and there's conversations next week, and our leadership is gathering to kind of reboot this offsite. We have an offsite the second Friday of January every year. It's a Friday-Saturday thing, and we came up with some significant kind of things that are happening in the life of our church. And so we're going to get together next weekend and kind of reboot that, figure out where we're going with that stuff. But the end purpose here, guys, all is actually for the people who are in the seats, but I want you to look around you. There's empty seats in every row. There's empty seats in every row. And those empty seats are not just about people who we want to get butts in the seats so we have a bigger crowd. Those seats are for more Matthews. The people who Jesus is compelling and prompting and saying, hey, come follow me. And when they do, they immediately move, like many of us have, from this posture of being explorer to learner to follower to investor. And that's what the empty seats are for. It's not just so that you have, you know, elbow room. But we believe that there is life transformation and people's lives that need to be changed that still needs to happen in our community. And so the nature of that as we end is that it will probably take, as an investor, it will take a server's mentality. It will take a server's mindset. See, we're going to sing the song as we finish called Lead Me to the Cross. And see, the cross was not merely a place of death. The cross was a place of sacrifice and redemption, and it was a place of investment. See, Jesus gave his life for us not only that we might be saved, but that also that we might be transformed. And his Spirit's discipling investment in us is given also that it might flow through us and into the lives of others. And so the posture of an investor is one who says, I will serve and I will sacrifice and I will believe that it's not just about me, but that it's about every Matthew who's out there waiting for Jesus to walk by and say, you know what, I could change your life. I want to change your life. Come follow me. Come follow me. I'm going to do something transformational in you. And we get to be a part of that. And to me, there's no greater thing in the world than being an investor and being a contributor, not just in Catalyst Church, but to be an investor in the work of Jesus transforming lives. That's what my life is all about. And I'm praying and I'm hoping that as we lean into that as a next step, that we'll re-up. For some of us, we need to take a first step on the on-ramp. And for others of us, we need to say, yes, that's what I'm here for. That's what this is all about. I surrender myself to that again. So as we pray and as we sing, that's what I'm asking, that you will have that conversation with Jesus to say, yeah, I want to be a contributor to what it is you're doing in this world, because I believe that the transformation I've experienced is something I want others to experience as well. Jesus, This word and this work that you have called us to is one that is layered with so much excitement, but also some cost. And so, God, as we are processing what next step means for many of us, the next step is something that is something for us. But I'm compelled to by your word to be reminded that it's also something from us. And so, I'm thankful that you've given me an opportunity to be a contributor, to be an investor. I say that with joy in my heart. And so I'm asking, Jesus, that as you work in our hearts and as you compel and you prompt these next step questions for all of us, that the first question might be, today might be, how can I lean in? How can I invest myself into the work of Jesus in the world? And we just want to thank you for that opportunity to be a part of that, in Jesus' name. Amen. So we're going to stand together. We're going to sing as we close, and then just kind of give you an opportunity to reflect, an opportunity to pray. If there's something that God has prompted in you as you've heard today and as we've worshiped, just communicate.